All right, guys, welcome to the official episode 4 of Thoughtful BS with Nate and Tofu. Soon to maybe be retitled. We're still working on that.
Yeah, we got it.
Again,
yeah. We'll keep thinking.
I don't know. What about Thoughtful BS? I just, you know, that might work.
Oh, you mean instead of without Nate?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, totally, totally.
And we'll just have our names in, like, our, you know, make it classier.
Yeah, but then, yeah.
But no, so again, I'm sorry, we took another 2-week hiatus, mostly because I just was not finding True Detective terribly substantive enough, and we're busy moving a little bit, but hopefully we'll be back on, I know I say this every week, or every time we podcast, but hopefully we'll be back on the regular weekly schedule starting either next week
or the week after. Next week. I think we could do Mr. Robot or some other TV shows. I think there's a lot we could talk about that we have yet to... approach.
No, yeah, I mean, I totally agree. I, it's just more like timing things right now with the move, you know.
Right.
All of you out there are moved. It's, you know, it sucks.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Our washing machine doesn't work. It's a sad day. But anyway, speaking of sad days, I guess I wasn't so much sad. It's just like, maybe just relieved that this is all over and we can start talking about a different goddamn show.
Oh my gosh, it was... And the weird thing was there were, like, they didn't work, but there were, what made it weird for me is there were a couple moments in the finale where I finally felt like I sort of saw, if not clearly, at least through, you know, a sort of stained glass or sort of an opaque surface, what they were trying to do or what Nick Pizzolatto was trying to do.
Yeah, I feel like Nick Pizzolatto took a tapestry, you know, like a story-based tapestry.
Right.
With, like, every scene, like, kind of ingrained on there. Just like, you know, I bet I could make, like, you know, an 8-episode television series about this. And he, like, made it literally about this freaking tapestry. Because honestly, dude...
You mean tapestry in terms of all these characters?
Yeah. Well, just like you know those tapestries that are like they're like a wall tapestry,
yeah.
And they have like a fable on it, like
the knight
and the dragon, and you have every major scene from the tapestry.
Yeah.
I feel like he just took one of those.
Yes.
And like in each picture, you know, they're side like just a bunch of characters.
Yeah.
And like he just tried to make a story for every single character, like. This was the most unfocused storytelling I have ever seen. And I don't know if it's 100% his fault.
It's hard. It's so hard to tell where the blame is on something like that. I mean, you can't. You can just look at the product and, I mean, he's the auteur of the series, so technically, if he wants to take credit, I mean, other than Carrie, I can never say his last name right, Carrie.
Fukunaga.
Other than Fukunaga, like, he's, like, the main, like, sort of creator that's around this season. And so if he wants to take credit for the show and it's, you know, sort of first season glory on a certain level, he also needs to take credit for its...
Yeah, it's faults. It's terrible faults.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, you guys heard the podcast. Like, literally 3 episodes ago, I was kind of ready for interesting things to start happen after the shooting. And then you heard how frustrated I was with episodes 5 and 6. They were just very slow and dull. And
we didn't really get anywhere from them, and anything didn't make sense. I mean, any more sense.
If anything, there was that cool. We saw that cool sequence in the whorehouse.
Right. That was interesting.
I feel like there was. I don't want to discount Nick Pizzolatto, although we probably end up both.
Like, yeah, we definitely will do that over the course of this podcast.
Yeah, but maybe if he had a different director, like I've heard this a lot. Like, this suffered because this series needed one focused director, because there are so many different scenes, so many different stories going on, that if they weren't given the same, I suppose, directorial tone as, you know, like, but the first season. I mean, there's still major issues.
Exactly. That's what I'm wondering. That this could have benefited from that. I don't know if this would have been good because of that.
Well, I think so, because, like, it would have made a scene with Frank and, what was his Kelly Riley's
character. Jordan? Yeah, we learned that name last night Frank again. And Jordan. Like, they finally, like, you're like, oh, there's that like, character's name after eight episodes. I'm sure it's been said. It just wasn't said.
It didn't stick. It wasn't.
And which makes sense, because the character didn't stick. The character was so,
Like, I feel like those scenes, to me, stood out the most. It's just not blending with the rest
her,
of the
her
story.
Scenes?
Her and Frank's scenes.
Interesting.
The entire time.
I mean, they definitely stood out. I don't know if they stood out in a positive way.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They stood out and made it feel like, what are we watching now? You
know? Yeah, yeah.
I hate this because I just hate tearing apart people's work that still was an incredible creative feat. It just did not sing. Well, like, this would have been a cool, like,
He was really trying to do the L.A., you know, the L.A. corruption, the pulp, the noir, the Double Indemnity, the Chinatown, the Sunset Boulevard. I mean, he was trying to sort of do that and take that type of, you know, film and put it in an 8-episode model. Other than the issues that you get when just trying to adjust that sort of structure to 8 episodes, I mean, it hit tons of other snags just in terms of, I mean, honestly, to me, the Vince Vaughn was, there were occasional moments where he justified himself, but I still leave the series feeling like he was miscast.
I agree. That being said, would you really want to see the same story, but just with a different...
No.
Actor. Maybe a couple of episodes. But, like, and not the series in its entirety.
Right. No, not at all. I mean, so, yeah, fair enough. But, yeah, I mean...
Obviously the 4-character focus did not work at all.
No, because also, especially in 8 episodes, it's just all over the place. And then they had these characters... I mean, he had these other, like the Kelly Riley character, who just, like, didn't have... There's not time for her character, like, and to follow 4 other characters in 8 episodes. It's just...
Right, and then, of course...
There's not at least time for a character and to pretend that she is a significant major character.
Right. And, I mean, like, let's be real. As soon as Paul, Taylor Kitsch, got shot at the end of episode 7, I was like... Great, do we stop having to care about his mom and stupid girl he got pregnant? Because I didn't care about those people, and, like, we still had to see them in the final episode.
Right.
I was just like, God, why?
I mean, that, I think, was definitely trying to give closure. I mean, it's funny how many TV shows, like, especially with series finales, I know this wasn't a series finale, but it was in the sense that the story
could have been concluded.
We'll get to that. But in the sense that the story it was telling was wrapped up and concluded. But I guess a lot of sense, I think, Sopranos and how polarizing it was, and there's tons of other, like, huge flops of the series finales, you know, and also just these polarizing series finales. There's this tendency now to want to give closure. You even see it in a show, like, I mean, Breaking Bad did it, like, very much. Breaking Bad wrapped everything up very neat and tidy with a bow in the final episode, and, like, the climax was all, like, the sort of final season, and the final episode was really just resolution and, like, some stuff happened, but it was really just tying up all the loose ends to leave everyone sort of, so there were no big questions hanging.
Right.
But you even see it in Mad Men, a show that intentionally resists satisfying the audience, that in its final episode chooses to have stay. I mean, whether you like it or not, there's no denying, at least in my opinion, that there is a certain level, even if you think it works for the story, of, like, sort of crowd pleasing, you know, giving the people a little of what they want with that whole Stan and Peggy, you know, out of nowhere happy romance, you know, which is just not that. I mean, I actually liked it more than a lot of people, but I have a friend who has a very good point that scene is, that's not Mad Men, that's not the show at all.
No, and I agree, but honestly, the entire pacing, more so of the final season of Mad Men, I guess, than just the series finale, still I thought felt very formulaically like Mad Men in
true.
The sense that it was like, we're just watching these people's lives. Like, people expected these... I feel like people expected, like, guillotine blades to fall.
I don't think I expected...
Not a true Mad Men viewer, and this is going to get really pretentious.
Yeah.
Not people who've been watching relatively from the beginning or after, like, the first two... one or two seasons, three seasons of Mad Men. I'm talking about people who, like, you know, when season 5 was on, everyone was like, oh my god, you gotta watch this show. And then they marathoned all of it.
But everyone, that was everyone in the, it was like, when it was really zeitgeist was season 2. I mean, that's when everyone was watching it, when it was like all hip.
You know, I agree, but like since then, I don't know, anytime I heard someone was disappointed with the ending of Mad Men,
right,
I was just like, I don't know. I felt like they were treating it like other shows. And I mean, like, well, you can't do that.
But at the same, I mean, what I will say, and I did like the finale, and I will defend the finale, but for a show that spent 7 seasons sort of critiquing and disavowing the American dream, it in multiple ways buys into it in the final episode, which was sort of fascinating.
Which is a metaphor.
See, you could do that too. Yeah, you could go in that direction as well. But, I mean, that's what to me is fascinating. But the romance and the ad and the interview, I mean, it's a show that's just talking about, you know, sort of ripping apart the American dream. And at the very end, it does the exact opposite.
And, I mean, I guess the other thing about this season of True Detective is, like there was such a fat stamp of critique that the first season was laying on top of us. Like, hey, society, decay and political and moral corruption of the high levels, this is how it trickles down, and this is literally watching the land seal away everything because, like, society is decaying into that is such a strong theme and tone to just stamp over the entire season, and it comes through very, very strongly.
Right.
I don't at all get, there's a different theme every episode with this season.
Well, there's...
But I don't feel like that, I don't know, is that a fair way to critique? Like, I'm...
Yeah, no, it I is. I wanted that from this. I would say that was sort of being attempted to be done on a certain level in terms of the evil and corruption in the city. And that goes with urban life. Sort of the previous one was more what you were just saying, but specifically rurally... This was, you know, more trying to take that and put an urban lens on it, and specifically instead of L.A., that, you know, like I said before, the whole, I mean, that the noir, I mean, last night it really came through to me with how pulpy certain parts were. But, so I have a question about last night's episode and significance. I mean, we should talk about the ending, and I mean, like, the ending, like, the final bit with the two women, and if there's any significance of that. But also... I mean, and okay, so while I'm on this note, I will say I did, and there's a bunch of spoilers about to happen, folks, just heads up if couldn't put that together, but I did sort of like, I was sort of wondering, as Vince Vaughn was stumbling through the desert, how they were going to do his, because it was sort of pretty clear from early on that he probably was not going to survive that, how he's going to give up, and there was something to me that was very realistic and terrifying about his realizing he was just sort of hallucinating and had already, I don't know, because I feel like I've had equivalent things with dreams where I've thought, like, maybe not where someone said to me in a dream, oh, you're already asleep, but I could see that very much happening, having a realization that, oh shit, wait, I'm already, and I think there might be a short story I'm familiar with, I can't remember it, that does that too. There totally is. It's a famous, I'm going to spoil, but the occurrence at Owl Creek Bridge. I don't know if you ever read that. Twilight Zone episode of it.
Who's the author?
It's Southern. I feel like an idiot. It's not Faulkner. I'll look it up.
Dude, don't feel like an idiot. I don't know any authors.
but what it is, and that's, oh, see, now I suddenly like that moment less, because I just realized where I know it from before. It's a short story, Civil War, a guy's being hung, and right as he's about to be hung over, they made a Twilight Zone episode this. It's a famous American short story, but right as he's being hung, the rope cracks, and he falls into the river, and they shoot at him, and he, like, runs and escapes instead of his action sequence, and then it's just him trying to get home to his wife, and him to his daughter, and, like, he sort of, like, gets there and goes through the door, and I can't quite remember how it ends, but, like, he realizes he's hanging from the, like, that the bridge never broke free, and he's just been hanging there.
Yeah. I mean, is there a name for that? Because, like, they did that in Boardwalk Empire, too.
Oh, really?
When Richard Harrow dies... But maybe they make it seem more dreamlike in that.
I mean, I don't know if there's a name for it as much as a lot of people that are writing in fiction are probably well educated literary. You know, it's both in the American mainstream, like, canon of, like, classic short stories and Twilight Zone.
Yeah.
So it makes sense that someone who's into television writing would have, if not consciously be in conversation with it, at least have that be something that was
there.
That's, yeah, present.
Okay. Well, that's now I want to think about all those times.
But so really, really quick. Yeah, no, I'm curious to think about that too. But really quick question: what did you think about? Because I thought Rachel McAdams might die mainly because it was weird. It did this sort of montage at the end. Well, yeah, that too. I wanted everyone to die.
Horribly.
Fuck that show.
But that's how it should have ended.
What do you think about the water desert forest? I mean, that felt. I don't know what it was. I know it was going for with that. And then Kish died in this in the herb. The
I really what I thought so that was is like you know how we describe LA or California.
Yeah, as being very diverse
and having everything. That's why it was great for movies.
Right. Yeah.
So I definitely got that kind of feel from it.
Right.
But.
And we finally saw why we've been seeing the woods. I mean, other than the cabin in the woods, we went to in episode 6 with the orgy and the horrors. We finally saw why it kept ending in the woods.
I know, and I was just like, ugh. Oh, it's too bad he stopped to see his kid.
Yeah.
And then didn't get the message.
And then didn't. I mean, that was, yeah, that was, I'm not. But then I mean, it had all sorts of little, but then you saw the paternity test, so it felt like more.
You felt better about what happened?
Yeah, yeah.
You feel better about it? I felt better about it when I saw that. Because Ray Velcoro was the best character in that series.
Yeah, I mean, he did. I will say Colin Farrell overdid it for me with the mumbling a little bit by the end. Not enough that I would fault his performance. Maybe more the editors that chose
to take. I agree. I noticed
there's
that.
Just something, there's something about, like, and there's a lot of actors do that, too. It's because, like, I think part of the idea is that you talk realistically and, like, you're not projecting and trying to make your voice very clear for the camera, you know. And you're trying to do it realistically as you actually would do it and hoping that the sound people pick it up well enough. McConaughey, I'm not sure if it was in season 1 of that, but McConaughey's done that in something a lot. And Heath Ledger's notorious for having done it at Brokeback Mountain.
Doing what?
The
mumbling? The mumbling. Well, McConaughey just does that.
Okay, yeah, okay, yeah.
If we don't leave Earth, we're gonna feed our children. And you just see when you do it the McConaughey accent, you have the noted hand gestures.
I'm curious to see.
They come
I'm
with it. I'm
really curious to know what McConaughey and Harrelson thought of this season of True Detective. They were technically executive producers, I mean.
Yeah, oh, that's a good point, but I mean. Maybe Harrelson cares, but just knowing McConaughey is a person.
Right.
Oh, did I tell you where I had seen the duo of McConaughey and Harrelson before? I discovered it.
No.
So, as a kid, one of my favorite, like, adult movies that my parents would rent that I really liked was called EdTV.
Oh, I know. I remember EdTV. It's not... His life becomes a reality TV show.
And his brother-in-law is Woody Harrelson, and they're like a duo.
Who's the lead in that?
Matthew McConaughey.
Is that really Matthew McConaughey?
Yeah, he's Ed.
There's a chick in that who's like the network exec or something.
Oh, yeah.
Who there might be a romance with, might not.
I don't remember her name, though.
Oh, weird.
But, so, honestly, I wouldn't mind if, like, they had a little cameo. I didn't. By the end of the season, I didn't care enough for it. It's like, oh, if they had a cameo, that'd be kind of tight. Because fuck this, like just
right.
Okay. Let's. We've been digging in the dirt. Let's. You want to talk about some positivity about this?
Yeah. I mean,
The themes. No, they weren't that strong.
The themes were strong, but not really like not in a way that. Gave them any heft. I mean
it felt like the ending was like bad people do bad things.
It touched back on the father and son stuff because Frank had
Frank's dad
yelling at him and then he visits his kid. I was sort of surprised that Rachel McAdams, I thought her dad or her sister was going to factor. If not in the resolution of the mystery where it was going to turn out that they were involved in the whole Casper and Diamonds and
I definitely didn't,
conspiracy, I didn't really think was necessarily going to be the case. I thought they were somehow going to function back into the
Well, because the only connection the is story. The dad, like, met, like, oh, I knew this doctor and all these people back in the day.
Right, yeah.
Well, here's my insider's point of view, but it's not like...
Right, yeah.
Well, we spent so much... Like, that's the thing. We spent so much time with those two, and we also spent a fair amount of time with Paul's mom and lover...
Yeah.
Who he got pregnant that I'm just it all felt for naught. Like, episode 8 was like, where are some of these characters? And like, how, don't you love how they just casually said the black, I hate how I have to say the black woman, but the black prosecutor.
Yeah, who died.
Yeah, they just said, oh, she's dead now. They're pinning the murder on me. I'm like, that, okay, well, that just
so kinda, yeah, there's a lot. This, I mean, the script. Happened, like, so I guess I'm fascinated to look up if, I know that it's not a soul, like, Nick Pizzolatto writes it alone in a room, turns it in, and that's exactly how they film it. I know there's no way in hell that that's how it works. Partly,
do you think he's on set every day, though?
I don't know how much he's on set. I know that two of the episodes, I know that credits can be deceiving sometimes in terms of, for example, Matthew Weiner is technically credited as writing. I mean, there's often almost always a co-writer, but Matthew Weiner, just because the way he did his deal with AMC, is credited for writing every Breaking Bad episode. It says written by Matthew Weiner and Vince Gilligan, or Gilligan for Breaking Bad was not, even though he did just as much of the working in the writer's room and writing of that.
Right. Episode. Oh,
that's why it can be deceiving. Okay. So, what in terms of the credits? They were all written by Nick Pizzolatto, except for two, which was Nick Pizzolatto and, like, Scott something. You know, he had a co-writer.
Yeah,
okay. But so I guess what I'm curious, it seems to me like there might be less because the whole season revolves around this singular voice. And my understanding was, like, the feedbacks and rewrites were done on the first season, but this was – he sold this to HBO as, I mean – as a series, and these scripts exist. I mean, he sold the pilot, but these scripts exist.
Oh, he already had arc.
That was my understanding. And I'm fascinated to look how accurate that was. I
wonder if they're going to go back to that methodology.
Because also, I mean,
or if HBO's going to be, yo, dude, let us read some of these ahead of time.
Well, that too, because the first season you have, I'm sure he's been working on this for a while, trying to get it sold, and then suddenly sold successful, and you have a year to write a new one and film it. Right, which I'm sure he wrote the first one in more time with less pressure.
Yeah. I'm just so sad. Like,
I do think would be interested to have seen if he was more the showrunner and if there were some maybe other lead writers, which maybe there are, and they're more just hidden, and it's HBO trying to sort of get that auteur, trying to maintain the fact that this is a single vision.
God, and if anyone would do it, it would be them.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know. So that definitely fascinates me. Did you think that did it feel like to you like the final episode was sort of two separate episodes? To me, there was a clear sort of division after the, because then it kept. I mean, it was an hour and a half is part of this, but there was that shootout right at the train station. And then we sort of paused, had some time, and then we sort of followed these three.
Yeah, I mean, part of it felt like an epilogue.
It climaxed. Yeah, it climaxed.
Part of it felt more like an epilogue than the ending.
And then it wrapped up.
Because so we have the conspiracy unwinding, plays being made.
Right.
Frank gets his revenge, and we see him get carried off. Ray sees his kid. We see him. I'm trying to think if, like, that all works together properly. Yeah, Ray sees him.
Right, yeah.
His kid, and then sees he's been followed, drives off.
Right.
She then realizes she has to get on the boat. So we see them in the boat, we see Frank in the desert, and then we see Ray in the woods. So that, just before that point, to me, feels just like an epilogue. Not at all like...
Yeah, but there was even some stuff that happened before, because then it built up to that point where they were sort of being followed or something. But there was... When they were making the plan to get out of the country, I don't know. I just remember feeling like it was like episode building, tension, and then the shootout happened, and then it ceased, and then it was calm for like 5 minutes, and then slowly built again. And it felt very much like these two separate arcs to me, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, either way, it was not well stitched together hour and a half of television that was.
Yeah.
That's a long time.
A little under with, don't they have like a little behind the scenes thing at the end and like the previous beginning?
So, still more than 15 minutes of
television. Yeah, that's true. More than an hour of television. Yeah, yeah.
Like, honestly, I enjoyed The Leftovers season one more than this.
That's fair enough. I dismissed the first episode pretty quickly. I probably would have dismissed the season of True Detective far quicker had I not had some
minor
ray of hope
just
or
fake.
Having enjoyed the previous season,
because HBO has been so consistent in the past. Like, I don't understand. It's just so frustrating.
I also like always, you know, have my eyes open, not trying to be like hipster or contrarian, but especially when like something is sort of has negative buzz around it, like not immediately falling in. So that's why I was trying to stay sort of optimistic and keep an open mind with the first few episodes. But yeah, I really, in the end, I can't defend this season. I mean, we spent 8 hours. What did we watch? I mean,
all I know
that
was
that could have been a. I mean,
all I know is we watched Colin Farrell and Rachel McAdams hook up, and I'm so upset about it.
Yeah. So what is it that annoys you about that most?
It annoys me too.
No, I don't think it needs to.
That's what annoys me. It's like what it doesn't annoy me. I'm not annoyed that there's rape in Game of Thrones. It annoys me that this past season specifically used it as agency for Theon's growth, and rape had just had a main character raped.
Right. Well, so for me, I guess
like there's so many like other ways they could have done that.
I agree. And I wonder where I feel like it might have been a plan sort of from the beginning, you know, sort of for it going there, because it seems like then they have this pillow talk where they both bare their souls, where she talks about when she was a kid at the, you know, place with her dad, and he talks about shooting the guy.
Yeah.
And, like, well, I wasn't sure if it was really just to get us to that place with these two vulnerable people, like, opening up to each other.
Yeah, so, like, it's but easy I'm not sure after if that, sex. Like, I don't know, like, fucking get there somewhere else. How many movies does this happen?
Well, also, so then you get the other, instead of noir, the, like, I mean, that's part of the...
That's true.
The whole, like, you know, sex and cigarettes and...
But I thought we were getting enough of that from...
We're getting plenty of that.
Anyway. From Frank and Jordan.
Yeah.
I don't know. Okay. What bothers me is that, like, I... For all intent and purposes, other than, like, they've made... You know, Annie, Rachel McAdams' character, feel more like a woman in certain instances than it needs to be.
Yeah.
I like that the sexual harassment thing was tied in, mostly because it was farcical and I enjoyed that. Like, I hate it when, like, injustice like that's happened.
But, right,
like,
yeah.
Acknowledge that it's there.
Yeah.
But just, like, when, like, the sister was describing the whole, like, what she's going to have to do to get into this party and, like, oh, they might strip search you.
Right, yeah.
I'm just like, this is becoming very, like, sexual fantasy, kind of. And I don't...
Yeah.
There was a better way to do that, in my mind.
Right,
Of course, I'm not offering any suggestion as to how, but, like... And, you know, just... I would have liked it if... What if he got shot or fucking something?
Who got shot?
Ray got shot... You know how they end up having sex? Like, he gets shot before that.
Right.
Or gets, like, beaten. They're in a collision. It's something that just brings them closer together, other than, like, yeah, let's have sex and then talk about our feet.
Right. No, yeah. I mean...
Like, that to me was,
at that point, I didn't really have higher expectations for the show, though. I think that would have pissed, for me personally, that would have pissed me off in episode 2 or 3 a lot more.
At this point,
I was just sort of like... Yeah, this show is doing this, and I'm not surprised.
I do
very much understand your annoyance with
it. Well, I mean, you know, like, after, I definitely said, okay, this is just True Detective, but, that, among other things, really irritated me.
Yeah.
Like, if they didn't do that, maybe I would have been less irritated about the finale.
Right, I mean...
But, okay, so what is the next step here for HBO? They're not going to give up on this franchise.
No.
The question is, do they have to ditch Nick Pizzolatto?
No, I don't think
they can.
They're not going to visibly ditch him. They might try and do more of the script doctors involved.
I think the main thing is four, like, very weird cast signed on this year.
It was a weird cast, but it was also, I mean, it was sort of this, like, this thing blew up and it had some stars in it, and then it was like, oh, but this time it's going to be bigger, and, like, tons of cast. And that, I mean, definitely threw it off from the beginning, because it was just so convoluted and not, I mean...
Maybe what it needs is, like, it needs two actors, like, just not, maybe one, two non-TV, okay, let me just say, it needs two... non or high-end TV actors.
And
it needs a full supporting cast of either just premium television extras, I mean, like, supporting cast. Or just really, really amazing unknowns.
Right. So you don't... Wait, so are you saying you don't think you want any stars or just two?
Just two.
Okay, I see. That makes sense.
Like,
I also could go.
Oh, let's play the game. Who do you want to see? Really quickly,
and then we'll get to that. I promise.
No, yeah.
I could also go for in sort of, one unknown lead and one sort of larger name lead, and then a sort of supporting larger name person. Some combination. Okay, I don't think it needs to be for me. It's not that I want like. I'm not set on the McConaughey Harrelson.
But I think for third season, they're going to need to do that before the experiment.
I think they're going to need to do that too. Yeah.
I like predict this next season being good again, but like not like wow.
I agree. Also,
but I don't know. I mean, they haven't announced they're going to do it yet. They still could not.
So it hasn't been renewed. They will just because. It's HBO. They have a chance.
They renewed the leftovers.
And also, they're in a place where, unlike some other shows, the anthology nature of this series, even though Nick Pizzolatto is still sort of there and might be in their way,
they can do something different.
It's not like you've written us into this. Like it's not like sort of Homeland where Homeland got did great first and a half season or first. Half and two thirds of a season, and then just sort of got because of that written into a hole.
Yeah, and then it took itself two years to get out of
and redevelop itself as a completely new show.
Yeah.
So luckily they're not in that sort of situation. But it will be interesting to see what they do. Imagine it's a cast. I'm gonna watch it. Even if it's a cast you're not very excited about. Oof. I mean, that's what I'm wondering. What if I'm like Steven? It's an unknown, and what I mean, I would say like Vince Vaughn, but they've already done that. So like. I'm trying to think of someone who's like not super
excited. Kate Blanchett as the villain.
Do you like? No.
Oh my god! I'd watch the shit out of that. Dude, no, I'm thinking all female.
Okay, here we go. Just Gwyneth Paltrow and a like smaller name male actor who you've seen in some stuff. Would you watch it? Season 3? I would
need to know what city it's in.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So what is this? How does the setting?
Okay, because if they did Gwyneth Paltrow and like some male unknown,
yeah, and like relative, not like completely unknown, but like not like a
in like
star
rural
star.
Northern, like rural Pacific Northwest,
right? That
I'd be kind of interested in that.
Yeah, like no, definitely. Or like,
there'll probably be some Native American theme
do,
in there.
I could
that,
do the Midwest. I could go for the Midwest.
Yeah, but
too.
They can't do that because of Fargo.
Oh, that's right.
They really
you can't. Could no, because you there's a whole side of the Midwest that's not the Fargo Midwest.
That's true. Like there's Nebraska.
There's sort of the and like yeah, and that's not the don't you know sort of thing.
What about Detroit? I'd watch.
Honestly, I have a feeling it's going to be Jersey or New York City or.
I don't want.
I mean,
And do you want to watch another thing in New York?
No, but I think that they're probably going to shoot. I predict it shot if not in L.A. like. Or at least, if not, like, I'm sure parts will be shot in L.A., just like I think parts of the first season, you know, interiors were shot in L.A.
Yeah.
But, like, I feel like it's, I don't, I mean.
They need to go, I want them to go rural again.
They need to venture out.
They
yeah,
need to, like, that's.
I feel like they're gonna, but I feel like it's gonna be, like, Toronto or Vancouver.
I'd watch Vancouver.
Location. I would love to see Texas. I could go for Texas.
Yeah.
I'm not even a Texas person, but I could go for like sort of a no country for old men.
I would say Florida, but like that's Bloodlines is doing that.
And
whole thing.
Dexter already did that, and it's Florida, so who really needs that much?
Florida? I like the tropics.
Okay.
I'm a tropical kind of guy. Dude, I would love it if they did Hawaii.
That could be cool. Could be really cool.
It'd be so hard to pull off.
No, I mean, there's definitely. I mean, there's definitely something there because it's like, oh, they've already done like evil in the rural, evil in the urban, and now it could be like evil in paradise.
Yeah, yeah.
So that could be its whole thing is like how fucking gorgeous it is.
Well, like it'd be easier to do that in Florida.
That's true. And film crews too. But yeah.
Okay.
Also, not success.
I don't think. I hate this because I'm just such an optimist, but like, you'd have to come at me with like a. Bonkers cast and plot point
not
to like get me not to watch this again.
I'll probably start. I could definitely see myself if I'm skeptical going in and it's bad from the like if it's sort of not good from the first few, you know, three episodes, four episodes, I definitely could see myself not finishing it.
Yeah, we'll see what the build-up is like over the next, you know, six months.
Yeah, they'll definitely...
Mostly because I want to see, like, oh, where is it going to be? Who's going to get on? And most importantly, Nick Pizzolatto's role in the season.
God, it sounded so much more interesting when they first announced it. They were like, it'll be in California, but not L.A. And it'll be about a, like, decade or, like, very ancient, like, conspiracy regarding...
I mean, it technically was. It went back to the L.A. riots, but it was so...
convoluted.
Moot. It's so convoluted, and it's like, it's a moot
point. I mean, yeah.
Who cares?
Yeah, exactly.
Cool, so this is what motivated that guy? Great. Who cares? Like,
The
conspiracy in the first season was so crazy.
Was it people? I remember viewers, like, really getting amped up and then disappointed by how Silence of the Lambs, the finale was, where it just, like, break in and get the serial killer.
Yeah, right, I mean,
like,
forget,
when it was, like, no, everyone had these theories about the Yellow King and cults.
Yeah, but forget that. He still was in, like, a cult.
Right,
like, he was related to, like, those, like, that to me was what was still good is, like, and what made the whole existential thing at the end important is, like, yo, we got this one guy, we saved a lot of people, but, I mean, the hate is still out.
Right, yeah.
The universe is still the universe.
And also...
as we are cycles. And because also, time is a goddamn
circle. With that, it had the hook. It had this... In the first episode, you're introduced to, here's a case that we supposedly solved back in 96.
Yeah, oh,
and
okay.
Now, maybe we didn't solve it. So now, not only... I mean, it creates... Mysteries are better when there's multiple levels of questions that aren't just like, what the fuck, I don't understand this, or I have so many lists of questions that couldn't fit a paper. But a couple big questions, like, because at the end of the first episode, when he's like, well, when McConaughey closes the folder and is like, you better start asking the right questions then. I wanted to know, A, who did they catch for it back in 96, because we still don't know, and B, who actually did it.
Exactly.
So I had suddenly, immediately, these two threads that I was fascinated to know about. And here it was just sort of, I had too many questions to write down because it just didn't.
In the end, it
tied it together, sort of. But I definitely sort of might have felt like it was the mystery was made up as it was written,
maybe the most brilliant person in the season then is the editor who just realized that. It was like, yeah, I need to just throw in as many of those loopy, windy highway shots as possible. Just to, you know, just be like, oh, we were self-aware. Editing. We were self-aware.
That's what fascinates me about editing, really quickly before we wrap up so much, is that it's so hard to... I mean, you can see something and be like, well, the editor did a really good job, or that movie was really tight, and I'm sure the editor played a huge role in that. But you can watch something like this. It's mediocre. For all we know, this could have been a laughing... I mean, it still sort of was, but this could have been... so bad if it weren't.
Oh yeah,
it could have been that the editors salvaged this into something watchable.
Could have been like Robert Duvall's Wild Horses bad,
right? And so that's what's fascinating to me about editing. All this is it's hard to know the extent to which the editors saved something or hurt it.
Possibly,
I mean, sometimes,
it.
Yeah.
Okay, so well then thematically.
Mm-hmm.
So if this was more noir.
And, well, they kept the father. I mean, that was in the first season, the parents and kids.
Well, I meant, like, also stylistically, I guess.
Yeah.
Generically.
Yeah.
And then, the first is the Southern Gothic.
But the first was still noir, too.
It was noir, but, like, the Southern Gothic kind of setting.
Yeah.
Where, to me, is the next logical place for that? Would it be, like, a Western?
That's what I see. I see the Western. I see the Western Texas. I see something that's very No Country for Old Men. That's basically No Country for Old Men, the TV series.
With women.
Yeah.
I want to see women doing things because women are tight.
That aren't
And then women will stop complaining when I watch things that don't necessarily have women.
But it's also because he wrote... I mean, the Rachel McAdams character was well-acted and decent. You know, oh, for the series.
She made it
kind of
likable.
Yeah. Written fine. You know, but... the Kelly Riley character was just so underdeveloped and not really necessary. Was that character even, other than to give someone for Vince Vaughn to talk to? I mean, that character was there so Vince Vaughn could have scenes.
Like,
giving exposition, explaining stuff, and giving some acting shots and creating a character around Vince Vaughn.
That's all she did.
She was just a mirror.
Did you not hear me say that? Like,
oh, no,
night
I didn't.
I was just like, sorry. Dude, she... Yeah, I said exactly. She needed someone to talk to.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I was just like... It would have been more interesting if we saw even less of Vince Vaughn and more scenes with him and Ray.
Because
even that terribly written scene from episode 7 where they're sitting with the guns on the table.
I didn't hate that as much as you did, but
it was so bad, though.
It was not good.
Like, there are moments of it in other parts of the episode. Yeah. It's not terrible. That is so blatantly bad.
Yeah, no,
like,
it was.
I was like, God, this is, like, fucking squint your eyes more, like, both of you. Like, you're both, like, the Trumbull. Oh, God.
Yeah. So I'm thinking, honestly, the location probably matters to me more than the stars, but...
you want the Western.
I'd also be excited, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if they... I mean, I would go for Northwest over Western. I just think it's more likely we'd see succeeded Western. Also, I wouldn't be shocked if they made an announcement, and we're in order as an attempt to rebrand or sort of save the show, be like, True Detective Season 3 with this... moderately well-known director directing all episodes.
Thank you.
Sort of like Mad Men did in season 7, though they didn't really do this, like, where they brought Robert Towne on, who wrote Chinatown and Shampoo and some other famous movies from the 70s.
For all
the
writers. Episodes?
He wasn't the lead writer, but he was a writer on Mad Men season 7. Oh, okay. And so I wouldn't be shocked if they're like, and we're adding... Not Aaron Sorkin, because that just would not work. But a relatively, a name that the public, that's a writer that the public might sort of know.
Yeah.
Or just something to sort of try and rebrand the show a little. Because they're definitely, I was looking, the season finale did all right in terms of the numbers, but it was down from last year's season finale.
Yeah, I think the director doing all 8 is really, really
And a good director.
Help.
But fingers
well,
crossed.
Well, that helps too. But I wonder if they... Do you think they're going to look for a more filmic director or a TV director?
I don't think... It doesn't make much of a difference to me, personally. I mean, they're both... I mean...
Sorry for the noise.
That's a whole different conversation in terms of filmic and TV. I think that they're so blended. I mean, they're going to look for a more filmic director, in the sense of that word. But I take issue with that
director.
Word because... Right. But I think now that there's network TV that's, you know, more premium-esque and vice versa... No, maybe not vice versa, but I don't know. It's just, it's all blending a lot more. That's why I'm having a harder time distinguishing those words.
I mean, that's fine, dude. I think we can finally put this nail in the coffin.
Yeah, True Detective Season 2. Boing.
Ding,
done
ding,
with that.
Done
so
with
what,
that.
So what grade would you give it? Letter grade, if you were to grade as a whole?
Give it a C.
Okay, I would say C plus. Yeah, that's sort of where I am too. Yeah, because
it occasionally
has stretches or scenes in performances. It's not crap from beginning to end, but there's a lot of bad stuff in there. You think B maybe?
I'd give certain episodes a B minus.
There might be an episode or two I would actually give a B, maybe even a B plus. I liked
early,
the fourth
like
episode.
That's right. I did like the fourth episode.
And I sort of also had higher hopes because I was like, this show's finally going to go somewhere. And then it just didn't.
I mean, California's a beautiful place. So points for that, I guess. Yeah. But nail's done. We don't have to worry about this. Hopefully to next summer. Or maybe they'll even push it back to fall.
I bet it'll be fall. Too fast turnaround for summer. Yeah.
Other things going on. I mean, dude, did you like Rick and Morty?
I did. I mean, I haven't seen enough of Rick and Morty to really comment on it.
You didn't care for it that much?
No, I did like it. I just don't feel like ready to talk about it per se.
You want to see a little more of it?
I need to see more of it to be able to like give actual thoughts on it.
Oh, okay,
I mean,
no worries. But
I like it. I definitely like it. I feel like there's this new rise of cartoons for adults.
Again, like a resurgence of this.
Yes, yes.
For like a more niche. That started, I feel like, as really niche cartoons and now have been made mainstream, I think, as we get older.
Yeah.
But anyway, hopefully you might be able to listen to us talk about that in the future.
And we should talk about...
We'll
follow up on Ballers next week.
We will as well. But check out Rick and Morty. It's on its second season on Adult Swim. I think it's on episode 4, season 2. But you can see all first 11 episodes of season 1 on Hulu Plus. So make sure to check that out.
And let's all watch some more for next week so we can chat about that more. I mean, I definitely really liked it. I just don't have enough of a
filling your weekly Archer void if you're like really a huge Archer fan.
Or even like a sort of a dark adventure time or dark.
You watch a show, it's like definitely like, so let's Adventure Time's
for
a plot
adults.
People can file. So it's really wonderful. We'll pop back in Ballers. I'm an episode behind.
Same.
Overall, I've been pretty happy with it, but...
Yeah, I mean, to use a brief batting analogy, I know you hate baseball. It's sort of like, with Ballers, like,
Ballers is basically like doing just like bass hits, like doing it successfully and well, and just doing it. And like, whereas True Detective,
this is actually a great analogy.
True Detective like tried to do a Homer, but like it was sort of high on acid and maybe also like a little. I don't know what else Nick
the ball was like, doing, but was like a misprint.
So You know what I mean? Ballers is trying to hit a lower bar, but it's just trying to hit it well, and True Detective was just sort of on its own level.
Thought it could hit the bar that it set for itself, but instead, I don't even think it hit bars. Like, it occasionally, I mean, like, it felt threw like it, shit at it, and it was like, oh, cool. And it was like, no. But, okay. True Detective's done. Check out Rick and Morty. I hope you're all still watching Ballers. But we will be back next week with some more fun stuff to talk about.
More thoughtful BS.
More thoughtful BS to waste more of your precious, precious time. Thanks so much for listening, guys. You guys have a great one. Bye.